Well, there's a bad moon rising because Osvaldo is about to destroy a bad interpretation of a passage. How often, Osvaldo, have we seen the tendency to take one verse and to come up with a theology and ignore what the rest of the Bible says?
I mean, I think that was last week's episode's thing, right? Where they take one little passage on Proverbs and make a whole theology of children and salvation out of that.
Exactly. We've seen that in so many other areas, haven't we?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you introduce your verse and get us going?
Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about Isaiah chapter 3, verse 12, a popular passage that you may have heard. And let me read it real quick. It reads, "My people, infants are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, your guides mislead you, and they have swallowed up the course of your paths." So, man, I've heard some people kind of use this passage to mean that, you know, God not only prohibits women in church leadership, but prohibits also women in leadership in secular spaces as well. So this could be, I don't know, female presidents, prime ministers, even like CEO of a company. Just in general, any space that requires exercising authority over other men. And I think most popularly, this is kind of like supported by John Piper, who, commenting on this passage, says, "The Bible does not encourage us to think of nations as blessed when women hold the reins of national authority." So if anything, what John Piper's comment means is that some people really take this seriously, you know, to mean, yeah, women, not even in secular spaces, can lead or rule. Now, man, you made a really good comment on our Deborah episodes a few weeks ago when you're like, we have to be extremely careful of importing our modern gender debates into the text. Because when we do that, I mean, we completely obscure what Isaiah is trying to teach us. And we also obscure the hidden glory behind our passage as well. So I'm sure, Pastor, in your experience, you've probably heard of this many times as well. You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, exactly what you just said. It's whenever the agenda is patriarchy, they use this verse, you know, women should be in the home and not out doing, you know, authoritative things that men could do, because when they do, it's a judgment on the nation. And so, again, it's taking one verse and ignoring any context in the verse, ignoring any language difficulties, which you will point out there are, ignoring the rest of the Old Testament, ignoring that the New Testament fulfills the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And this is what we've seen. This, and for years, of course, cults have done this. Hmm. Now we see this done more popularly, that we find our one verse. And so we make our statement against women. And then Isaiah 3:12, we put right next to it as if slam dunk, we win.
Yeah.
And it's just a horrible way to do theology, but why don't you take us a little closer into the text so we can interpret it correctly?
Yeah, so there are two competing translations, and I'm using that word competing as a slightly literal, because we have actually two very important sources that give us two different translations. The first source is called the Septuagint, which is the Greek version of the Old Testament. And the second source is the Masoretic Text, which is the Hebrew version of the Old Testament with vowel points, since the original text did not have them. Now, the Septuagint, instead of the word women, actually has the word creditor or lender. And we're going to explain in a moment how that fits in the overall context. But that's one translation. While the Hebrew version, the Masoretic, actually has that word, women. So you may be asking yourself, how does these two sources have two completely different words? Well, the reason is because in Hebrew, the difference between the word lender or creditor and the word women is actually only one vowel point. I want you to listen closely. The word for women is nashim, and the word for creditor is noshim. Nashim, noshim. The same exact consonants, just one. The difference is only one vowel point. An A sound and an O sound. So you can imagine just the difficulty that these translators had when they came to this word. All this to say, that it's actually very difficult to reach a conclusion on this textual issue alone. Therefore, we need the context of the passage. What is Isaiah 3 talking about? And we're going to expand on that in a little bit and see how each word, whether creditor or women, see which one kind of fits better in the context. But regarding Isaiah chapter 3, we have to have in mind that Isaiah is describing a people who went after other gods and are under God's judgment. He's not talking about government structures, how Israel should lead themselves. He is describing the type of leaders that mislead, mistreat, and oppress God's people. So that's what we have to have in mind. One, the complexities of the text, and two, the context of Isaiah 3. Any thoughts, Pastor, on the issues found here in Isaiah 3:12?
Yeah, when you look at the context, it always opens up the passage and the point.
Yeah.
And so what's happening in Israel is you have cowardly men, which may be why here they're called women. They're effeminate in the sense that they're gorging themselves. They're not sacrificing for others. They're delighting in foreign worship. They're drifting with the present debasement of their time and culture. And if they're children or infants, the point is they're unqualified. Prophecy uses symbolic language to make points that have already been explained in the passage. And so these leaders that Israel has already had, they haven't had babies as leaders and they haven't had women yet, but the passage is describing what's actually happening.
Exactly.
Not a possible future judgment, but this is what's happening now. That's the entire context.
Yeah, and something that we have to have in mind, okay, is that in the background of Israel's history, in the background of the prophetic imagination, in this case Isaiah, is the law. All right, we have to have in mind that the filter by which Isaiah is talking and writing to Israel is through the lens of the law, and this is why it's important. The law never explicitly prohibits children or women to rule over the people of Israel. That's not a minor point, and that can't be overlooked. That's super important. The law never prohibits that. And we actually have examples in Israel's history where we have children like Joash in 2 Chronicles 24:1, who at the age of 7 began reigning over Israel. And he actually had a decent reign in the beginning under the supervision of the high priest. And then we have, as we talked about a few weeks ago, Deborah, who was a judge and a prophet. So we have positive examples in Israel's history of children as being leaders and Deborah, a woman, being a leader. So it's weird that Isaiah would be addressing government structures here when the law never prohibits these things. So what then is Isaiah doing? And like we said, he is declaring judgment over Israel. Because of Israel's idolatry, what happens? Verses 1 to 3, God actually begins removing all the competent people necessary for a functional society. As judgment, he begins taking away their good leaders, their skillful workers, their judges, their prophets, and even their soldiers. So what is left? And that's what the rest of Isaiah 3 is about. All Israel has left is tyrants, abusers, incompetent people, and they are now defenseless as a country. So once again, that's going to be key for understanding whether the word creditor or the word women should be used. But before that, Pastor, how does this fit in Israel's overall history that Isaiah here is describing judgment upon them?
Yeah, again, it's not about gender. We always try to bring in our modern debates of what women can do when the text is not interested here in gender. It's a prophetic idiom on the judgment coming on Israel, represented by its leaders. And so in the Old Testament, sometimes you have women in authority like Queen Jezebel, Athaliah in 2 Kings, and they're evil, but they're evil because of their character.
Yeah.
But then you have good queens. You have the queen of Sheba. And, you know, Solomon honors her. She seems a good queen. Esther is obviously a good queen. And it's always based on character. It's based on the person itself. The very fact that they're men and women, it does not mean judgment. Now, obviously, in Israel's history, we'd expect men, because God told David his sons will reign, leading to the Messiah. But this passage really can't be used in our what can women do debates. It's not Isaiah's point at all. And you cannot take Israel's judgments and then use them today in our governments or in people. Yeah. I mean, even if it's saying that when a woman or a child is ruling, that's God's judgment on Israel, you can't even take that and apply it today.
Yes.
Because Israel's unique. They're in a special covenant with God. I mean, think about if we did that consistently. In Deuteronomy, it says if Israel disobeys God, one of the judgments will be women would not be able to bear children. They'll be barren. So are we going to say, well, if a woman cannot bear a child today, she's under God's judgment? Oof. That's what Deuteronomy says. See, this is why James says not many of you should become teachers. If you're not able to divide the word, if you're not able to understand how the law and the gospel are different, how the New Testament, the New Covenant fulfills the old, the Bible becomes a weapon that teachers use for their own agenda to destroy people.
And you mentioned earlier that these prophets use prophetic imagery. They use language that's not meant to be taken literally to highlight whether it be judgment or highlight something about them or God. And in this case, we see Isaiah using the language of children to communicate inexperienced or, like you said, unqualified leaders. So in verses 4 and 12, you have Isaiah saying, children rule over you. Now, it's not literal children. It's the type of leader that's ruling over Israel. And like you said, the context dictates how we're supposed to take that. And we see that in verses 6 to 7, where Isaiah describes this one scene where the Israelites seize. They just get this random guy from his house, put on a coat, and say, you're our leader, save us. Can you imagine that type of democracy? I mean, nothing will get done. That person's not qualified. That person has no experience on how to save a people, much less get them out of poverty and oppression. So that's the idea. In the same way that children are inexperienced and are unqualified, these are the type of leaders ruling over Israel. Now, having that in mind, this applies to verse 12. When we get to that portion of chapter 3, Isaiah begins describing abusive leaders. So what about the word of women? We already talked about the translation issue that we have two choices. We can either use the word creditor, lender, or the word women. If the original word is women, then we have to have in mind that Isaiah is using it here as a literary device. He is drawing from the stereotypes of the ancient Near East of women, that, you know, women were weak and cowardly, meaning that here Isaiah is saying that the leaders of Israel are weak and cowardly. But here's my issue with that position, is that it doesn't really fit the context. Because when we read Isaiah chapter 3, the abusive leaders here described are never really addressed or described as either weak or cowardly. They're abusive for a very particular reason. In verses 14 and 15, these leaders are abusive because they oppress the poor. Notice the language that Isaiah uses. It says that the leaders plunder the poor. They grind the faces of the poor. Nothing about being weak or cowardly necessarily. Therefore, the word creditor actually makes more sense. Because in according to Jewish law, lenders were not allowed to charge interest, because who were those who were seeking out a loan? People in need, people who didn't have money. Why would you charge interest to a person who doesn't have much already? So God prohibited that type of behavior. But in this case, people who have forgotten the law of God, in this case like creditors, they were taking interest. They were robbing the poor. They were leading Israel to severe poverty and ultimately to destruction. So if the Septuagint is correct, the passage would actually read as, "My people, infants are their oppressors, and creditors rule over them. Oh, my people, your guides mislead you, and they have swallowed up the course of your paths." Given the context, the word, I think, creditor actually makes more sense. People who rob the poor, take interest, lead Israel to destruction. Pastor, do you have any thoughts on why the word creditor actually fits the context better than the word women?
Yeah, I think some of our listeners may not know, when you say Septuagint, the Septuagint was the Greek translation of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Around 200 BC. And so you had 70 Jewish men who translated the Bible into Greek. And so you figure when they read Isaiah 3:12, they saw creditor.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, the Septuagint was most quoted by Christ as the word of God. By the way, on a side note, this is why a King James only view doesn't work. Because Jesus himself quoted from two different translations, the Hebrew and the Greek, and they didn't always match perfectly, just like our King James and our NIV doesn't match.
Mm.
One expresses things differently. But Jesus quoted from both, and the apostles quoted from both, and called both the word of God. So I think with you, the passage is about abusive leaders.
Yes.
And so to say, this is God's judgment. You have abusive leaders that are like creditors. And I think that makes the most sense in the passage. But even if it's women, again, the point is not that if the wrong gender is, then that's a judgment. The point is, this is an idiom to speak of a certain way the men were abusing their authority.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And this leads us to the horizontal and vertical elements of our passage. And beginning with the horizontal, which is, how does this passage point us to God's kingdom, to the kingdom of the Messiah, to the new creation? Well, first of all, Isaiah's point is not about how to structure a country's government, or like you said, or it's not about having gender-specific leaders. Because if that's the case, it would be super ironic, because historically, whether it be in world history or in just Israel's history, most of the worst leaders have been men. So it's super weird here to just, like you said, the judgment would simply be over having women, when most of Israel's history consisted of having male kings who led Israel to idolatry and destruction. If anything, Isaiah here is showing us the need for a better and greater leader who would not abuse the people of God and lead Israel back to God. And that's when we get to God's kingdom, to the ministry of Jesus. Jesus is that greater and better leader who did not abuse, but rather gave his very life for the sake of his people. Notice when we take a closer look into Jesus' ministry, we realize that he led through his humble service. And beyond that, he not only now, through his resurrection and ascension, he not only does he rule over all things, including his church, but he also transforms those he leads, leading us to a life of holiness and obedience with renewed hearts. So that's what Isaiah is pointing to, a time towards a leader who will lead his people in a non-abusive way, who would lead righteously and transform his people. Now, when it comes to the vertical element of our passage, how does this apply to God's people now? And I mean, depending on where you're from, right? We all suffer from terrible leadership. Whether it be here in the United States or outside. My mother actually comes from, she's from El Salvador, and I mean, most of her childhood was defined by the civil war in her country. Terrible leadership, inexperienced individuals, thieves, people who pursue just a love of money and power, and consequently the people suffer. So we do suffer from terrible leadership in the same way that Israel suffered. But Isaiah 3:10, our passage actually gives us some hope. It reads, "Tell the righteous it will be well with them, for they will enjoy the fruit of their deeds." And it's beautiful in light of the work of Jesus. Because as Christians, we believe that because of Jesus and his work, God sees us as righteous. And we benefit from the rewards that Christ has. we have the promise of the kingdom, the promise of the new creation, where Christ will reign and his people will rest from their suffering. So that's the hope that we have. Not in our current leaders, not in politics or anything like that, not in gender-specific leadership or anything like that. No, it's in the fact that Christ will come back and he will reign perfectly. Any thoughts, Pastor, on the horizontal and vertical elements of our passage?
This really goes back to, I think it's almost been 2 years now, our first few episodes when we made the point that to understand the Bible, you have to understand how the new fulfills the old. How everything is pointing to the new creation. That Israel is not a paradigm for America or modern governments. No. Israel is the church typified. Israel is God's redeemed people in an Old Testament picture. So the kingship always points to Christ. It doesn't point to our president or things like that. And so you have to get the basic structure of the Bible down, new fulfilling the old, or you're going to go to all these weird and terrible places that we see happening.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So in conclusion, like we've been repeating so far, we have to be very careful of importing our own modern gender debates into the text, because as I hope we were able to show, it obscures the text and puts our hope in places where our hope shouldn't be. Secondly, we should be careful of trusting in the world's government for our own restoration and salvation. Because like we mentioned in the beginning, some take this to mean, you know, that we should only have male leaders, because then we will receive God's blessing instead of his judgment. And as history has repeatedly shown, that whether you have men or women, they will fail us. So we should imitate Isaiah here. Isaiah, when we read the book as a whole, he himself trusted that the Messiah, not some other man or some other woman, no, the Messiah will rule, and that person, Jesus, will restore all things. So as pilgrims, you and I, the church, let us wait patiently with faith for Christ's return, who will restore all things. So any final thoughts, Pastor?
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you explaining the passage, but it's just a reminder to everyone that when you do theology, when you study the Bible, always study the context around it. Always make sure, you know, when you see somebody writing something and then they just quote a verse, always look up the verse and then read the whole passage and see if that person is using the verse correctly. Is that really the point of the passage? It's amazing how many people put a verse next to something they write. And then I'll look it up and I'll say or think, this really has nothing to do with this passage. They just put that verse up there thinking, okay, there's proof of my statement. And so always be more careful with people. Use your whole Bible. And with prophecy, use remember it's symbolic language. And so look at the passage, what it's generally saying, what's happening, and you won't go into these, you know, bad areas we see these one verse people doing.
No.
So, yeah, thanks again, Osvaldo, for opening that up to us.
Of course.